This is episode 160 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Can you sue a nursing home for bed sores?
The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith.
Hello out there. Welcome back to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Thank you for joining us. We have another informative episode regarding pressure ulcers. If you're new to the podcast, if you wanted to learn even more about pressure ulcers and bed sores in nursing home residents, I would encourage you to check out some past episodes. We talked about healing and pressure ulcers in episode 138 with Martha Kelso. We talked about kind of a holistic approach to preventing pressure ulcers in episode 151 with Dr. Aletha Tippett. And then we talked about assessments for skin integrity, which is one of the principal ways to prevent bed sores in nursing homes, in episode 152 with Dr. Nancy Bergstrom, who, along with Dr. Braden, came up with the Braden scale, which is an assessment used to assess a resident's risk for developing pressure wounds. So we are no stranger on this podcast to talking about pressure ulcers. So if you want more information, go check those other episodes out. This is going to be kind of I was trying to think about this before I went on the air, but every once in a while on television shows in the 80s, there would be an episode where it would just be a composite of different scenes from previous episodes, like in the Golden Girls. Like, it's like, you know, do you remember that one time when Rose did this, and it would flash back to another episode? I feel like this is going to be one of those type of episodes where I just want to hit highlights of other episodes where we've talked about pressure ulcers. So it's kind of like a highlight Golden Girls episode. But the first thing I want to address is, what is a pressure ulcer and how do they develop? Essentially, a pressure ulcer is a wound that occurs under an area, a bony prominence area on the body where pressure is placed. So that is typically going to be on the heel of the foot, on the buttocks, and on shoulder blades, where the body is laying and makes the most amount of contact with the surface, and where there is a bone that kind of, you know, squeezes the skin and tissue between the surface and that bone. That's typically where and how the pressure ulcers develop. And it develops because the body needs blood. The body needs blood to deliver oxygen, to deliver nutrients to tissues, to the muscle, tendons, ligaments, the whole deal. Body needs that unrestricted flow of blood. So when you have in those areas, most often of the bony prominence, you know, with pressure from the body on a surface, then the blood flow in that area is either going to be restricted or prohibited. And so when you don't have that circulation, you're not going to have oxygen and you're not going to have nutrients flowing to that portion of the body. And as a result, over time, and this could be a matter of hours, it could be a matter of days, tissue and muscle begin to die and the skin opens up and an ulcer injury occurs. So as we've talked about on other episodes, there's a certain process of this and how we determine at what stage in the process we are in. So stage one typically is where you see a little bit of non-blanchable red skin, blanchable meaning that if you press down on the surface, usually it turns white or gets discolored a little bit and then goes back to normal after a few seconds or maybe a minute. When it's non-blanchable, if you do that, the skin becomes discolored but does not go back to normal. That's usually stage one. Stage two You see again, there it continues to be non-blanchable. The skin might open up a little bit. Stage three, you have the wound is now beyond the first layers of skin. You're into the muscle and tissue. Stage four is the worst stage, and that's where you're typically you're through the first level of skin. You're down into the bone, and tendons can be exposed at that point. So that's the quick rundown of the stages, and that's how the pressure ulcer typically develops. Again, like I said, a pressure ulcer can go from stage one to stage two like that, stage two to stage three like that, and stage four can, you know, that can be a matter of hours to a day or two, depending on the risk factors, depending on the chronic illnesses, depending on the overall physical condition of the resident. So how are nursing homes negligent in causing pressure ulcers? So a nursing home has certain obligations, and these obligations come from federal regulations, state regulations, and then just the clinical standards of care. Primarily, the nursing home is responsible for doing a head-to-toe assessment of every resident that comes in the door. That includes cognitive capacity, understanding cognitive capacity, behaviors, mobility, how much assistance is required for activities of daily living. The whole deal of life in that nursing home should be assessed for that resident. This includes skin integrity. So the nursing home, for example, needs to go through and say, okay, how mobile is the resident? Because that's a factor in skin integrity and pressure ulcer development. How, you know, is the resident incontinent of bowel or bladder? They run through the list of risks through that in that assessment. And out at the end of that assessment comes out a kind of like a threat level, a risk level. Based on that risk level, based on that threat level, a care plan is developed. And the care plan, as we've mentioned in previous episodes, is kind of like the blueprint, the schematics of how care and interventions will be provided to that specific resident. So this would mean that, okay, well, the assessment says this person is at a high risk based on their factors. It's a high risk. And so now the care plan is going to reflect that high risk by having many more interventions and plans or in treatment options than someone that is not a high risk for developing a pressure ulcer. So the care plan will say something along the lines of the nursing staff will turn and reposition the resident every 2 hours. They will make sure that incontinent care is provided immediately, that the resident will be informed of the risk of pressure ulcers. Whatever the case may be, the assessment will be, and the risk factors in the assessment will be reflected in the care plan, which will tell the nursing staff from shift to shift what to do in order to prevent pressure ulcers from being developed. Then the nursing home needs to periodically assess and review that care plan. So at the end, that's my roundabout answer in terms of how are nursing homes negligent in causing pressure ulcers. That's how they're negligent, is that they fail to do one of those three things, or they don't do one of those three things reasonably or under the standards of practice. So an example of that is failing to conduct an assessment appropriately. So we see in cases where a resident with limited cognitive capacity, somebody that's cognitively impaired, that is not mobile, they have paralysis of some sort, muscle weakness, and perhaps chronic illnesses like diabetes or a history of stroke are assessed as low risk, when in fact, typically someone that has those factors should be a high risk. And consequently, their care plan does not have the appropriate interventions in place to prevent them from getting a pressure ulcer. So the assessment is faulty. That's an example of negligence that would make a nursing home liable for the developing pressure ulcer. You guys did an assessment that was wrong, that's not up to snuff, because this person should have been assessed as a high risk, and therefore many more interventions should have been implemented based on that. And we can, and that we can go on ad nauseum. Okay, so the care plan can also be faulty or can be negligently put together. And then you have oftentimes the care plan is not effectuated, so to speak, that the nursing staff, even though the care plan says to turn this individual every 2 hours, they in fact do not. So there is a litany of ways in which the nursing home can be liable for, or negligent, I'm sorry, in causing pressure ulcers. There's no end to it, but essentially it comes down to proper assessment, proper care plan, revising that care plan, and actually carrying the care plan out. If they are negligent in any of those aspects, then they can be responsible for any injuries resulting from that pressure ulcer. Can you sue a nursing home for pressure ulcers? Absolutely. A typical pressure ulcer lawsuit is based on the idea that the nursing home failed to do one of those things that we just mentioned. They're quote unquote negligent. They breached the standard of care. So, and that's what you allege in the lawsuit. There's a couple other critical components to suing a nursing home for pressure ulcers. And that is that you have to prove causation, meaning that just because the nursing home did something wrong, that they had a faulty assessment, a faulty care plan, or they failed in some way to carry out the care plan, even if they would have done all those things, would this individual have developed the pressure ulcer to begin with? Just because the pressure ulcer happened after the negligent action doesn't mean that the negligent action caused the pressure ulcer. But typically it does. So that's the causation component you also have to have evidence of. So in a pressure ulcer case, you're typically can sue multiple defendants. So that's going to be the actual nursing home itself. You can sue the administrator or the director of nursing. You can sue management companies. Management companies, oftentimes nursing homes will hire management companies to oversee training, to oversee the day-to-day operations of the nursing home. And sometimes based on the systematic failures of that nursing home, you can bring the management company in as a defendant as well. And then, of course, you can bring in as defendants if it's a corporate, like, you know, a large corporate chain of nursing homes. Maybe you can bring in the home office or the corporate office. If there's a systematic failure or evidence of a systematic failure, you can bring those in. So you would sue all those defendants based on your theory of negligence and that the negligence caused the pressure ulcer. And that would be heard in a court of law, depending. So just as a quick aside, we've talked about arbitration in other episodes of the podcast. Arbitration is an alternative dispute resolution method. It is an alternative to suing in court. And oftentimes nursing homes will put that in their admission packages, meaning that when you sign your loved one into the nursing home, you are agreeing not to sue, but in fact, you are agreeing to arbitrate potential claims. So it's possible that you might not be allowed to sue them. You would need to arbitrate your claims. And I encourage you to check out those episodes dealing with arbitration. But by and large, if a nursing home is negligent in causing the pressure ulcers, you can sue them. The defendants will be all those parties that I mentioned before. And then you spend a certain amount of time, or your attorney spends a certain amount of time developing the evidence through depositions or written discovery. And then at some point, usually it takes 2 to 3 years to see one of these things all the way through to jury verdict. But that's would be the point, is that you are suing them in order to receive recovery in the form of money damages. That would be the point of suing a nursing home for pressure ulcers. So speaking of that, what types of compensation are you entitled to in a typical pressure ulcer bed sore injury lawsuit? So in Georgia, we typically divide the money damages, the money compensation, into a couple of buckets. And those, the first bucket is what we would call special damages. These are damages that come with a price tag, that are tangible, that have receipts, as the kids say these days. But an example of that would be medical bills. So a nursing home, if they are liable for causing the pressure injury, if your loved one had to seek treatment in a hospital to be treated for those pressure ulcers, whatever medical bills are incurred, the nursing home will be responsible for compensating you for that. So medical bills is one. Another form of special damages, and this is not typical in nursing home cases, although we do have some clients that are nursing home residents on the younger side, usually typically as a result of some type of need for physical therapy. But to whatever extent, lost wages can be a measure of damages in a pressure injury case. Although if your loved one most likely is not working, they've passed the working age, this is not going to be something that they would be entitled to. Only if someone was working and as a result of the pressure injury were not able to work, they would be entitled to lost wages. That does happen sometimes. It's just not super common. If your loved one happened to pass away, you can get funeral expenses. You can get the costs of burial. But at any rate, that first bucket is special damages, things that, you know, there is a definite number assigned to it. The other bucket is what we call in Georgia general damages. These are damages that are essentially left open to the interpretation of the jury. And we typically call this pain and suffering damages. Pain and suffering can be anywhere from, you know, literally how much the pain costs. I mean, how much the pain hurts you, like the level of pain, to how the injury has affected the resident's life. So for example, if the pressure ulcer caused the amputation of a leg, you know, what's it worth to not be able to walk anymore? Or what's it worth to, you know, now forever you've got to be, you know, for the rest of your life, you have to be worried about your body opening up and having a hole in it. So these are things that we say we are left to the enlightened conscience of a jury to determine. But all these things are general damages, and they all fall typically within the concept of pain and suffering. Pain and suffering is just, you know, we have in Georgia, you know, a list of 10 to 13 different categories of pain and suffering. So you would ask a jury for both special damages and general damages. That's the only thing that typically a jury or a court of law is going to be able to afford you and your loved one, is money to compensate you for the loss involved in that pressure ulcer. And I say that to differentiate any other type of relief or remedy, like injunctive relief. So for example, typically in a typical pressure ulcer injury case, you're not going to be able to ask a jury to fire an employee at the nursing home or demand that the nursing home update its policies and procedures. These type of non-monetary remedies, as we call them, typically are not going to be something that the jury is going to award. It's literally going to be the whole concept is going to be that the jury is going to determine how much money to give you, if any, to compensate you for your loss. So that is the compensation that you would be entitled to, the categories of compensation that you'd be entitled to. So typically, our clients are the nursing home resident, but we typically deal with loved ones acting on their behalf. And that's the next thing to address is, can you sue on behalf of someone who's died of pressure ulcers? Or can you sue on behalf of somebody that might not have died but does not have the capacity to sue on their own for pressure ulcers? And the answer is yes. That is extremely common. In the state of Georgia, if a resident dies because of pressure ulcers, then another individual, which is typically the surviving spouse or the surviving child, will go to probate court and be appointed either as administrator of the estate, a representative of the estate, or if there is a will, the executor, the person that's named as the executor, can bring a pressure ulcer case on behalf of the deceased person. We'll be getting into that, the concept of wrongful death, in another episode, which is a claim held by next of kin. But in terms of, can you sue on behalf of someone else that has passed? Yes, but that is typically going to be if you have the authority to do that, and the authority is being the administrator or the executor of the estate. And that all that really means is that the person kind of lives on within the estate. So the estate is there to collect any outstanding assets, like any receivables, and which would include claims for personal injury, and to pay debts. It's kind of like a winding down of the affairs of that person. So a claim for personal injury is one of the affairs that you know, the estate has the authority to move forward with. So in a typical case in Georgia, you would see, you know, the case caption would say something like, Jane Doe as administrator of the estate of John Doe as plaintiff. So Jane Doe is acting on behalf of John Doe. The claim is held by John Doe, but the estate is acting on behalf of John Doe because he's no longer here. So that's typically how that's handled, at least in the state of Georgia. And we've talked about in previous episodes, we've talked about the probate process and setting up probate in order to bring a claim of personal injury. How long does it take for a pressure ulcer case to resolve? That will be dependent on whether or not a settlement can be reached or whether or not the case needs to go forward in court or in arbitration. So there are some instances in which the attorney can gather all the evidence, put everything together into a package, and attempt to negotiate settlement. And that process of negotiating settlement can be anywhere from, you know, a few days to, you know, a few years to negotiate settlement. In my experience, we've sometimes settled cases within a few weeks or maybe a couple months after getting all the information and sending the package, the demand package essentially, to the nursing home. However, it seems that filing a lawsuit is most often the case that you'll have to do that, because no one is obligated to settle anything. It's generally in everybody's best interest to do that, but no one's obligated in the law to settle. So typically you have to file in order to get, you know, the ball rolling. So after you file the lawsuit, if it goes all the way to jury verdict, that can take anywhere from 2 to 3 years. And depending on whether or not something is appealed, and you can appeal something at the beginning, you can appeal something after trial, that might go up on appeal and then come back down and force you to maybe redo the case. So, you know, it's definitely, in at least the state of Georgia, you're not getting a resolution through a jury verdict anywhere, you know, before 2 years usually, usually 2 to 3 years. It's just unfortunate. That's just a part of the process that, you know, it takes a long time to get justice. So that's not to say that just because you file the lawsuit means that you can't settle along the way. And that's often how it works, is that you try to negotiate a settlement. It does no good. You file the lawsuit, you continue to gather evidence, and maybe you negotiate settlement at some point in there along those lines. And so one more thing in that is that in Georgia, oftentimes the judge is going to make you, it's going to be mandatory that you mediate settlement. So there is oftentimes where you might be able to mediate settlement before that 2 years, that 3 years before you get to the jury verdict. So how long does it take to resolve? Again, it depends on whether you can negotiate settlement or it has to be filed and go through a lengthy court battle before it's either settled or you get a final jury verdict. So that's pressure ulcer injuries, suing for pressure ulcer injuries in Georgia, the nutshell abridged Cliff Notes version. If you enjoyed the content of this episode, please be sure to like and subscribe. If you are watching this on YouTube, please be sure to leave a comment. Let us know if there's any type of topic that you want to see addressed in an upcoming episode. We'd be happy to hear from you. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast comes out every other week on Monday. And with that, we'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.